The world owes the Avengers an unpayable debt. But while a great many people see you as heroes, there are some who would prefer the word vigilante.
Hello and welcome back to A Stark Contrast, where we discuss the differences and similarities between Marvel Comics and their MCU counterparts. And we are your hosts, Jeffrey.
And I.
Hello, hello, and welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back. Jeff, if we decide
to release the Zoom, the recording, probably will, like, why not? But... if you can hear in the crisp clarity of our voices, we are recording through Zoom, but this time not because one of us is sick at all.
Thankfully.
It's just the timing and look and of everything this week.
Look, we're still on time. Yeah. We're still on time.
But like, it doesn't matter like what we both have going on. We will find a pocket of time to record.
Legit.
Yeah. And I was, So like, I'll never forget Tuesday. Like when I texted Di, I was like, oh my God, we're supposed to record this week, huh? And she was like, yeah, we do. And I was like, oh my God, but we're here.
Yeah, we might as well jump right into it. So I was going to cut some of this out, but I'm just going to do it anyway. But I wanted to give a shout out to an artist named Alvin, AKA Nose with Glasses on Instagram and Threads, who created this awesome Marvel Rivals art that I found on a whim, and I bought some of his stickers to support his art. And so there's like, he currently has drawn Team Guns, Team Ice, Team Sticky, Team Bash, Gamma, and Gods. And so if you're a Marvel Rivals fan, you should check them out. Video, Luna Snow, she's a little like mirror sticker. Of course, your boy Jeff.
It's time to put on a show.
And then Namor or Namor hugging a squid. I also got Team Guns, because why not? Because it's a Punisher, Puny Puny.
Judge, Jury, again!
Bucky, and Rocket, of course.
Enjoy the Amplified!
Hey, team! And so I also got the keychain, because why not? And I think he caught on that I was into Rocket, because he also gave me an extra Rocket sticker. And... funny enough, he threw in a freebie of Jeff the Land Shark, the keychain. Everybody loves Jeff, man. I was like, wow, very nice. So thanks again, Alvin. I re-added my Gambit comment to the list. So Jeff, I actually saved this to show you. Been it together in person, but scheduling did not want that. So I have finally, I mentioned in our last episode, or the episode before that, was it? That I was getting my Gambit comics back. Again, I've carried this thing.
Did you get it like that next day?
I got it 2 days after.
Okay.
And so I got it the day our last episode dropped. And so, yeah, I wanted to keep it and open it with Jeff. And so we're going to find out this very second what grade this comic.
Before you open it all the way, can you remind me of like it was signed, right?
Yeah. So this was an original Uncanny X-Men number 266, which is the first appearance of Gambit ever. And it was drawn, the cover was drawn by Andy Kubert. The character is co-created by Jim Lee. And Chris Claremont provided the story. And so I originally had Chris Claremont sign this many, many years ago. And I hadn't been able to meet Jim Lee until
Comic-Con.
Past October. And so I brought both issues and both copies, and I was like, what the hell, why not? And I upped the ante, because not only did he sign it, but he drew on the cover.
That's right, yes.
Gambit on the cover for me. So I've not seen the grade yet.
I'm going to guess.
We're going to look at this grade.
I want to guess. I think it's high. I think it's a 9.8.
Because my last one was 9.4, I think.
It was, yeah. Okay. I think this is a 9.8.
Ready to? No, I don't think it's a 9.8. There's no way.
Hey.
You ready to look?
Yeah.
We're going to look together. 1, 2, 3. 8.0! Oh, wow. that's crazy. I thought this one was better, but it might be because he drew on it.
Really?
It could be because he drew on it. Yeah.
Do they give reasonings?
And also, you know, he's probably manhandling it when he was drawing. So
there's that's also interesting. That. I would have thought like a drawing.
Yeah.
Would.
Well, it's defacing, right?
Yeah, but if you have an official art, the official artist.
That's crazy. Ooh. But the fact that I got both signatures.
Yeah.
And the remark on a signature, a gold signature, even at 8.0.
That's good.
Hot dog. All right.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Looks great, right?
It does.
Yeah. It's pretty slick. It's pretty
like
slick.
That's like super rare for I feel like that is like getting like an actual drawing on the cover. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, sure, I guess it's quote unquote defacing, but it's like,
yeah,
but the official artist is
exactly. And so it will stay in that condition unless I can get Andy Kubert, to which I will then crack it back open, get him on it, and potentially the interior artist as well. It'll be worth a lot. It's already worth a lot now. So I'm like, woohoo!
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm tripping. It was 8.0, but guess that happens, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so as far as the Marvel Universe is concerned, rumor has it that Vision Quest has officially begun filming. You saw this.
I haven't even seen that.
Yeah, so apparently that's starting filming. The rumor is that, yeah, Billy and Tommy are following each other on Instagram. So nobody knows yet for sure, but I guess we'll find out soon enough. But not only is Vision Quest filming, there are further confirmations, sort of, that Avengers Doomsday is officially underway as well, filming in London this month, in addition to Daredevil Season 2, which we already know, Born Again Season 2, yeah, is definitely filming, as we can
crazy.
See. Crazy. Yeah, from social media. And not only that, to top off this amazing Marvel Sunday, the voice work for X-Men 97 has also officially begun for Season 3. So we haven't even gotten Season 2 yet, but they're working on 3 already, so... Per Lenore Zan, of course, friend of the pod. Yeah, that's it's kind of nuts that this is all going down. But man, things are brewing. Things
I know. Are
brewing before Thunderbolts drops. It's there's
a lot. Yeah, so much.
So much going on. Holy crap. But that's only a good list, right? So
hey, a lot to look forward to.
Right. And so as we venture into today's episode, this is the first episode we've done in a minute. Of a full-fledged character study. So
it's been a while.
In celebration of Captain America Brave New World, we're gonna talk all about Thunderbolt Ross.
Oh yeah. And
before we get to that, just a reminder, we are not experts. We don't claim to be. We're just a couple of nerds nerding out. And you know, this is a pretty dense character, so I just wanted to fully emphasize that this was a tough one because I probably said this in our Hulk episode. I'm not well versed in the Hulk realm at all. I don't know much about the Hulk, at least when it comes to nitty gritty, like I could X-Men or Spider-Man. So this was an interesting one for me to dive into. But just to preface, we covered Bruce Banner in episode 32 of the podcast and then Jennifer Walters in episode 40. So if you'd like to hear more about the Hulks, go ahead and check those out. But as far as Thunderbolt Ross is concerned, created by Stan Lee and Jack King Kirby.
Goats.
First appearance in The Incredible Hulk number 1, cover dated May 1962. Issue titled The Coming of the Hulk. So you remember this cover. It's Bruce Banner and the gray, and he's, you know, mutated.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And so, of course, notable attributes for this issue, of course, not only is it the first appearance of Hulk, obviously, but also it's the origin of the Hulk, which sometimes are not one and the same. The same as such for Thunderbolt himself. We get Thunderbolt's first appearance here, but we don't know anything about him until later, which we'll talk about. But this is also the first appearance of Betty Ross and Rick Jones on top of the other two. So it's essentially the core team of the Hulk universe here. So do you want to give a guess for the cover price? You might know this already. So 1962.
I'm thinking 10.
10, Jeff. 10. 10? You're off by 2 cents, my friend.
It's a 12. The goddamn 10 to, between 10 and 15 always throws me.
Yeah. Well, 12 cents when it first came out. And then I'll send you his first panel appearance as well, just for funsies. And so the highest graded that I could find of this issue on sale as we live and breathe on Shortbox, the CGC 6.5 is going for $72,000. So if you have yourself $72,800, you could buy Hulk number one.
Damn.
Graded at 6.5. Yeah. So imagine this. Like, I mean, I'll probably be dead by the time that it reaches this height. But if the Gambit comic is 8.0 and say in 30 years he becomes one of the most monumental characters of all time,
yeah,
my nephew looking at the inflation equivalent of $72,000.
That's a lot, man.
A lot of money. And yet it still feels low to me personally for the Hulk. But again, 6.5, you know, you go up, it's probably worth so much more. And then, of course, on eBay, a CGC 5.0 signature series signed by Stan Lee sold in January 2025 for $31,400.
Bro.
So there's that. Yeah. That seems low to me, but I mean, you know, I guess people will take the money and run.
It's a car right there.
It's a car.
So you know what I'm saying? Like, oh my gosh.
It's some people's like half, if not more, of their annual wage, depending.
I know. Jeez.
Buddy. And then as far as the low scale goes, lowest graded short boxed CGC 1.0 is going for $9,300.
Still a lot of money, by the way.
Money, it's barely held together. And then same thing, I think it's the same comic, it's the same seller, I'm not 100% sure, but on eBay a CGC 1.0, oh actually just kidding, on eBay CGC 1.0 sold in February 2025, that was just last month, for $7,100.
My gosh.
So yeah, you could probably sell a page out of this book and still make a lot of money, all things considered, being perfectly honest. And so this is the mind-blowing part for you, Jeff, is that a fair market value approximation for a 9.2 of Incredible Hulk number one is $825,000.
So there's one in existence.
There's, yeah, definitely one in existence, and it's going for just shy of $1 million. So that sounds more of what I was expecting. A 9.2. It's so crazy to me. And then raw, you're never going to find it raw unless you're like, you know, going through some antique store in the middle of nowhere. You're never going to find it. So
dude, it's probably like abandoned, and it's in like it's in some box in the attic or the basement of some old home.
Okay. Yep.
Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody's got it somewhere. Just a pristine copy waiting to be found. But
that's crazy.
More importantly, what was your first exposure to this character?
Funny enough, it's probably not even The Incredible Hulk, the first movie. Really? It's probably not. But obviously it's the same character of William Hurt.
Yes.
I mean, it probably has to be, I think the thing that I remember the most is watching that first Age of Ultron trailer. Was it Age of Ultron or Civil War? Civil War trailer. Where he's in the conference room talking to the Avengers, and it was just so captivating.
Yeah,
he was like, the Avengers are whatever his speech is. The world is vulnerable, and I was like, oh shoot. It has to be that first Civil War trailer when he's talking about the Accords.
Interesting. Yeah.
Maybe,
I don't know. You know, like, to be honest, couldn't pinpoint if I even tried. Probably a floppy, like, you know, compilation, a compilation of Hulk comics. Otherwise, probably an animated series. I'm sure he popped up somewhere, and because he's basically like the JJ equivalent for Spider-Man, right? He's like, Incredible Hulk. Get me pictures of
the Hulk. Get me pictures of the Hulk.
I fought it. But yeah, so it was definitely not something as memorable as seeing the first Hulk movie, for instance, where we'll get to that in a minute. But yeah. So as far as trading cards and mini book are concerned, could not find anything in the books. I do not have a trading card of him, but I was able to find one before we started recording. So as far as Red Hulk goes, this card, I believe it is from, it's a FLIR Ultra, not sure. Oh, 2022 FLIR Ultra. And it says, hoping to fight fire with fire, General Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross underwent a transformation similar to that of Bruce Banner after years of trying to beat him with military might. He became the Red Hulk. So simple, straight to the point. That's pretty much it. Episode's done. Thanks for listening. That's pretty much it, though. It is very that it's quite simple. It's that simple, is that that's what happened. And so we'll get into a little bit of the nitty-gritty here. So yeah, so Thaddeus E. Thunderbolt Ross, I didn't look up what the E meant, stood for, so not sure, but
Evil.
that would suit him well. For a quick recap, in Incredible Hulk number one, theoretical physicist famed for his work in nuclear physics and gamma radiation, Bruce Banner was recruited by the U.S. Army under General Ross to develop the first gamma bomb. And then the events are exactly as we remember them. Banner spotted somebody in the field. It was Rick Jones at the time in the comics, ran off to save him. Ultimately exposed himself to gamma radiation, and instead of dying, Hulk was born, and it mutated Banner's blood forever. And so previously we did not discuss the rest of the issue beyond parts one and two, because that was essentially the nitty-gritty of Hulk's origin. And so when it comes to Ross, however, he appears in the latter parts of the book, which is actually, I believe, five parts total. It's no longer than a regular issue. They just split it into parts for some reason. But he is, as you guessed it, just looking for this Hulk. He's looking for the monster that just ravaged through the military, of course, because that's his duty. He's supposed to take down this behemoth of a monster. And, you know, especially with the damage he did to the base, the soldiers, and of course, the stress that he put on his dear daughter Betty. You know, he had to
Yeah,
get
poor Betty.
revenge. Yeah, it's so sad because, like, you see that this is an underlying theme throughout the Hulk, like, line, is that he's using Betty as like the crutch of like, I'm getting revenge for Betty. And it's like, you don't really care about your daughter. You just want to do this for you, which is unfortunately true here. But it isn't until Incredible Hulk number 291. This is literally 290 issues later. And it was printed in 1984, which is 20 years later, that we actually get a better look at Ross's actual origin story, beginning from his roots as a young boy growing up in a family, quote unquote, with a proud military tradition. And he immersed himself in military history over the years. So they quite literally show you Ross as a toddler. And his father is military, the family was military. His grandpa before that, great, 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 all military men. So that's where he's coming from, which explains a lot. And so naturally, he met and fell in love with the captain's daughter while he himself was a military cadet floating up the ranks. And so still, he hoped to prove himself in the trenches. It didn't matter that he was getting these advancements. He wanted to show that he could battle and be in war and be in combat. And so it was nothing unlike what his ancestors had done, right? They had all fought great wars before him. And so he was like, I could do that too. And so he finally got the chance with the attack on Pearl Harbor. And
Jesus.
yeah, exactly. They're once again, like Marvel comics or any comic really, tend to do, they're lining it parallel to real life events. And so in Walt's case, it was Pearl Harbor. And so his efforts there and his stratagem and all that there during Pearl Harbor earned him the nickname Thunderbolt. So that's. And so I have a screenshot I'm going to share with you. And so it's very plain and simple. If you've ever, it's kind of like what they said in the movie. They kind of very, very quietly mentioned like a thunderbolt, you know? And so in the caption on the panel in the comic, Ross entered the war in the Pacific as a captain. The troops gave him a nickname, for at the head of his men, he struck like a thunderbolt.
Boom, boom.
Quick, lethal, dangerous, yeah. Never twice. That whole spiel. Yeah. That's how he earned the nickname, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So, again, he entered the war as captain, but he left as a major, which that's a task in itself. In real life, that usually takes 10 years. But Ross achieved this in the comics under 5.
Of course he did.
Yeah, it says a lot about his character.
Yeah.
Very determined. And so as time passed, Betty was born, his wife passed away, wars came and went, and finally the Hulk incident happened. And so the events with the creation of the Gamma Bomb tanked Ross's career. Absolutely, you know, he was like the General Ross until the Gamma Bomb incident happened. And then everyone was just like, what a failure. What a travesty to the military. This man is couldn't even keep his men safe type of deal. And so it's one of many, many, many things that set course for Ross's infamous rivalry with Banner that survived all the way through till now. And so, yeah, there's a bunch of nitty gritty in there, but we'll talk about that as we go through here. But in the MCU, officially, Thaddeus E. Thunderbolt Ross, portrayed first by Sam Elliott in 2003's Hulk debut film from director Ang Lee, and then subsequently portrayed by William Hurt, who was introduced in 2008's Incredible Hulk from director Louis Leterrier, and of course, most recently portrayed by the legendary Harrison Ford as of Captain America Brave New World. So, do you remember Sam Elliott?
No, I don't. Like, I don't remember him playing.
In your picture. He's in your background.
I know. That's why I was like, wait, who is that?
That's Sam Elliott, who is in the Ghost Rider films.
My ingrained like photo of Sam Elliott is him in a Star Is Born with Matthew McConaughey.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, I'm sorry. Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper. Oh yeah.
Rocky. That's what I think of when I think of Sam Elliott.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, he probably portrays a similar character every time, right? I think Thunderbolt is the one exception in a lot of ways
because he has a very deep voice too.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. And it's definitely one of those things where it's kind of funny because it's like, you could not portray this role aside from Harrison Ford. You could not portray this role unless you had a dope mustache.
Yeah.
Sam Elliott and William Hurt both had like amazing mustaches. So as far as Captain America Brave New World is concerned, we previously reported the stats on this movie. And funny enough, it's still kind of pretty much the same as far as IMDb and Tomato Meter go. So it's got a 6 out of 10 on IMDb. Rotten Tomatoes, it's 48% last I checked. So it's actually gone down a little bit, and so has the audience score, down to 79 from 80. Not too big, not too little. It's still thankfully making money, and it's what, 450,000 out of a 180 budget or something. So technically it's success. Yeah. Yeah. And then a 2.6 out of 5 on Letterboxd still. So, yeah, it's divisive, but
yeah,
people are enjoying it, thankfully.
Yeah, it's a fun movie, man.
Fun movie, yeah. And then as for Ross, yeah, he's one of the original imports from the Cross Studio films, constantly stalking the superpower heroes that we see in all the films.
He's always just up to no good. That's it. Yeah, pretty much. That's it.
And it's all for, the crazy thing is it's all for self-contentment, you know, it's not for anybody's benefit, for his own, really.
Exactly.
Yeah, which is nuts. And I forgot until I was doing this homework, I forgot that he had that cameo in Black Widow.
Yes.
He was like young Captain Ross at the time, probably.
Yeah, but he was dying.
But he was dying, yeah. So interesting. As far as in the MCU or cinematic universe is concerned, He was in charge of Biotech Force, the Biotech Force Enhancement Project, with focus on creating the Super Soldier Serum. Very interesting. And so after the events of The Incredible Hulk, which is the movie with Ed Norton, which I did rewatch, funny enough.
Wow.
I had a dentist appointment on Tuesday. And per usual, he was like, do you want to watch anything? And I was like, sure. Incredible Hulk. So I watched like half of it as I was getting my tooth done. And so I said this.
Half of it? Damn.
Yeah, no, I was there for a minute. I was definitely there for a minute. I had to get like a crown. So
okay.
So, but it's funny. I'm a good patient. So I was just chilling, watching my movie.
Wow.
Yeah. And I said to Andrew the other day, I was like, you know, I love Mark Ruffalo. I do. I think he's a sweet man. He's fighting for good. He's a great Bruce Banner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is Ed Norton a good Bruce Banner?
Damn.
I love Norton. He's one of my favorite actors of all time.
No, yeah, so, he is great.
He's so good. And so I really, really, I forgot how much I loved The Incredible Hulk. Mm. Underrated movie by far. But in The Incredible Hulk, Ross left the military and served as United States Secretary of State, where he approved the Sokovia Accords, which then carried over into the events of Civil War, of course, which is nuts. Like, talk about the long game, right?
They
planted this seed in 2008 and just kept moving from there, which is so nuts to me.
It's crazy.
Right? And then, of course, when we catch up with Ross in Captain America, he's the lead presidential candidate soon after becoming the seed president, intent on reassembling the Avengers amidst the adamantium trade war with other countries. He's just escalating constantly. Escalating. It's so nice. So that's where we last left him. Do you have preference? Like, do you prefer Harrison over William? Like,
I mean, I don't think I do. I don't know if that's a hot take or anything, but
yeah, I know, same.
I really liked William Hurt, and I like what he brought. I mean, like I said, like that's his that speech in Civil War where he's talking to the Avengers. That really like got me, and I was like, "Oh, okay, who's this guy?" Like he like it's like does he care about the Avengers or does he care about himself only type thing? Like I don't know.
Yeah,
but yeah, I like William Hurt a lot. Obviously, you know, he passed away, and it's like why would you recast him? But it's also like Thunderbolt Ross plays such a huge role in the in just like the comics, the story in general. So, and obviously. He's Red Hulk, so obviously you got to bring him back. But hey, you're replacing William Hurt with Harrison Ford, so it's not a bad
I agree.
Not a bad cast.
Yeah, not a bad recast. And even then, it's like I think Harrison said himself, like it's not a recast. It's like kind of like carrying it on, right?
Continuing the legacy of it.
Continuing the legacy for sure. Because again, Sam Elliott, fantastic in his own right, but like William Hurt, like next level, I would even say RDJ level tier of casting. Because he, like, if you scroll a little bit down, Jeff, you can see William Hurt looks like the comic book version, like, to the T. He looks exactly like this character. And he presented himself exactly how I imagine this character would be in real life. And so he was exquisite with the role. As much as you utterly despise him, which you were supposed to, he did a fantastic job. And I think Harrison did a great job of carrying the load and you know, making sure that ball past the goal, you know, for sure.
I agree.
I do wonder, of course, you know, like, is someone out there, like, you know, AIing, like, what William Hurt would have looked like in
as a Red Hulk?
Yeah, and I'm sure it would have been absolutely incredible, but life found a way to take him away, unfortunately. So, rest in peace. But yeah, did an amazing job. I definitely don't have a preference per se, but I absolutely love William Hurt in the role. So when it comes to the aesthetic, like I mentioned, you're trying to wonder what he looks like in the comics. No, he looks like William Hurt. That's exactly what he looks like. They casted him so perfectly. It's actually kind of criminal.
Yeah.
And
spot
then
on.
Yeah, I'm going to show you another. I sent you a couple of screenshots from the origin story, but I'm sending you one right now where it looks like
Oh,
it's
dude,
one of
it's literally him.
it's literally him, and this stuff came out decades before
Yeah.
William Hurt was even an idea. But as far as aesthetic goes, yeah. So William Hurt has portrayed this character since 2008, you know, just after Sam Elliott, all the way through to 2021, What If? And then fast
Yeah.
forward to 2025, Harrison Ford. And when it comes to Ross's general aesthetic, the cinematic versions were pretty spot on, even when Sam Elliott took the helm. And it wasn't until Harrison Ford, of course, where the character's trademark mustache was removed in favor of his political career. And it was funny how they like tackled it, right?
I
<It's>
think it's like I think like that I think that reasoning of like shaving his mustache off,
Yeah.
it was more of like addressing like the change that's
Sure.
happening of
I thought it was
like
clever.
yeah, 'cause it's like Harrison Ford is not gonna grow a mustache, dude.
Yeah, I know. I don't know that I've ever seen Harrison Ford with a mustache, now that I think about it,
Exactly. So
right?
it was kind of just like one of those like look, they made me do it because if I didn't, I wouldn't become president. And it's like, oh yeah, that's a
And
yeah.
it tracks. I mean, yeah, and it would be kind of nutty to see him with a mustache because it would probably look fake as
Yeah.
heck.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, he pulled it off, shaven, presidential. And so, as for Red Hulk, pretty hard to mess that one up. Aside the human attributes, yeah, he just happens to look like Harrison Ford. I think it tracked. It looked good. They did well. And then, last but not least, Gersha Phillips led costume design for Captain America: Brave New World, while Weta FX did the CGI work. So that's kind of,
Weta is
yeah.
so good. They're good. They're such a good top-notch VFX company.
Yeah, honestly. So, powers and paraphernalia.
He's just a man.
He's a man who's red and blue. So, again, this is obvious. At his core, Ross has no special abilities, no mutations. He is just a regular old human being. And so, this all changed in 2008 with the emergence of Red Hulk, who wasn't identified as Ross until 2 years later. So, funny timing for you, especially if you think about it. Makes his appearance in Marvel Cinematic history as William Hurt, same year that the Red Hulk is first published in comics.
Wow.
So they were probably like, there's something going on here. Maybe we can build off of this. And so as far as the actual powers go, the long short of it is at this time in Hulk comic lore, Betty was dead, and then
Oof.
Banner Hulk was exiled off Earth. So it's kind of like, gosh, do you remember? This is kind of a weird off deep cut, but do you remember in the Marvel Avengers game where they went to like Planet Hulk or whatever, and he was,
Yeah.
it's like that. He got exiled. He was exiled and pushed off of a planet, off of Earth. And then Captain America was assassinated
Oh my
this
gosh.
time too. So this is the aftermath of Civil War in the comics.
Got it.
This is all happening at the same time. His return was inevitable, and those people, all the villains, were like, we have to get together and assimilate, because they were fearing the retribution of what Hulk would do to them.
Yeah.
So Ross, it's then Ross agrees to undergo the Hulk transformation, as long as in return, Betty was resurrected.
Oh
Here
my
we go again.
gosh.
Bartering, bartering, bartering.
My gosh.
Yeah, so this is how Red Hulk is created. Of course, it's not that simple. There's obviously so much more to it. But yeah, the overarching theme is exactly that. And so, as far as creating him, so gamma energy that was drained from Banner was used via a device called the cathesis. I knew I was going to mess this up. The cathesis ray.
Six,
Cathexis? I'm not sure how you would say it in real life. Ray generator radiating Ross, and it unlocked his own potential as the Red Hulk. So
Whoa.
it spurred some. It not only did the gamma obviously infuse with him, but it awoke whatever was in Ross himself. And then, of course, specific powers include conscious transformation. So unlike Banner, at least at the time, he could consciously be like, I'm going to Hulk out and then turn into Hulk, which is something that in the MCU, as we have seen, and in the comics, obviously, he struggles. He struggled with for a very long time. He couldn't do it on command. He did it everything but on command. And so Ross was very different. He can control it. And it allowed for superhuman strength, leaping, stamina, durability, and speed, as well as healing factor and reduced aging, gamma radiation emission, and energy absorption. And so even in Hulk form, Ross kept his intelligence and could lift roughly 100 tons, which is nutty. Yeah, because, you know, the big trope in Hulk comics is that, of course, he for a very long time couldn't be, he was not verbal. He was kind of just Hulk.
Hulk, no leg banner.
You know, he was very, very gruff. And he communicated a lot in the earlier issues, but I think that it was lost at some point. And you know, it's again, it's like in the MCU where he's not really talking, but Ross was very different. He could actually do it. Just they just did not showcase that in the MCU. Speaking of in the MCU, so the story is slightly different because Leader is involved in the comic book version, but Samuel Stearns activated the latent gamma radiation in Ross's system in the MCU through the heart pills for his condition, which we've talked about in our Captain America episode. And they were laced with gamma radiation to help trigger the Red Hulk, which is just clever as it is kind of scary.
Of course.
Yeah. Because you could see, like, they didn't say it, but it was very silent. It was on screen that he kept upping the dosage, too. And then as for powers for Red Hulk, notable that they're similar. So nothing too outlandish, but noting that artificially enhanced physiology. So he had, that's what they called it when he hulked out, which of course led to superhuman strength, durability, speed, stamina, and reflexes, as well as regenerative healing factor and heat generation.
I think the heat too is a different.
Yeah, and because that is a very notable thing in the film, right? Like you could see like steam just coming off of his skin.
Yeah, like sparks and stuff. Yeah,
it's very interesting. I don't know that it actually was for any particular purpose other than like, he was just super irradiated, which is nutty. So friends, family, and affiliations. Holy smokes. So we're going to start with an affiliation because there isn't much to say when it comes to friends, let alone family for this guy. But a main player in Ross's canon is the Intelligentsia, not the coffee company, Jeff. I knew you were thinking it. Have you heard of Intelligentsia?
Of course. I love that place. Yeah, I
love Intelligentsia. So Intelligentsia is a bad thing in the comic books. And so, no sea salt caramel coffee for you there, bud.
Man.
So in the comics, they're merely an affiliation of Ross's and they're responsible for General becoming Red Hulk in the first place. Mm. And so in the comics, the group was led by a few versions of MODOK. So MODOK and then Superior MODOK, I believe.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So imagine that.
What a crossover,
right? And so MODOK and Leader... And it included a rotating rogues gallery, including awesome android, Chameleon, but disguised as Claw.
Okay.
That's the Claw. That's Andy Serkis Claw.
That's right.
Dr. Doom, a character named Egghead, the real Claw, Leader, Mad Thinker, MODOK, MODOK Superior, Red Ghost, Super Apes, Trapster, and Wizard. So none of these, you already know you're never going to see any of these characters unless they're in like Daredevil or something like Hawkeye maybe. Like we saw Speedster in Jessica Jones. It's kind of like that.
Chameleon.
Yeah. Chameleon and Dr. Doom are the two that actually really stand out among the rest of those that we have not seen yet. Well, we have seen Chameleon, but you know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, this is the part where I would be like, there is no Intelligentsia in the MCU. Actually, there is.
Ooh.
And we've seen them already. Funny enough, but very subtly. So, although there is some minor overlap with the cinematic universe, there is no formal team, but the reference does stem from She-Hulk attorney at law.
That's right. Yeah, I do remember. Yeah.
Right? Todd Phelps, aka Hulk King, and the chode billionaire bro that was obsessed with Jen Walters.
Yeah.
The mastermind behind Intelligentsia in the MCU, which is so crazy.
That's crazy.
Because they passed, they said the word over and over again. And I was like, there's something to this word. I know something. And of course, it stems because of the Hulk comics. And so the web hub that was the platform where they were just, you know, doxing Jen and all that.
Yeah, all that stuff
is Intelligentsia.
So that's crazy.
It's a modern take of it. But when it comes to Ross and the Intelligentsia in MCU, it's like there's no relation aside leader being in the film. There's no crossover, and doesn't intersect at all, which is very interesting. So let's talk about Betty Ross.
The most important person ever in his life.
Absolutely. Like, truly. And so Dr. Elizabeth Betty Ross. So short and sweet, scientist and professor at Culver City. Culver City? She's not LA. From LA.
Culver
University. Wow. That's just like slipping all over.
That's hilarious.
It came out so seamlessly. Right?
I know. I believed that. I was like, oh yeah, she definitely hangs out at at the mall, at the Westfield for sure.
If some of these villains and heroes can come from Riverside, you can't blame me.
Oh, true.
Right? And so Betty was a professor at Culver University, notably a strong-willed and independent-minded young woman.
Yeah.
Conventionally polite. She grew into herself as the storyline goes about. She obviously grows into a more stubborn and confrontational person like her father, which is an interesting dynamic. But throughout the comic book run, radiation is clearly a thing. And it affected Betty to a degree, who was once abducted by MODOK, becoming the woman bird creature hybrid thing called Harpy. So again, we talked about this in our Hulk episode. She became a bird person, and then she died, and then she became, she was normal, and then she became Harpy again, and then died, and then, yeah, because at one point, Ross kept her in a cryogenic suspension chamber, and then that's when the bartering of like, bring her back to life.
Yeah.
Coming through. And then it resulted in Red Hulk. But earlier in canon, Ross seemed so concerned with his daughter that there was no denying that he was otherwise emotionally distant. So
yeah,
he didn't know how to care about her. Like, he cared about her so much that he didn't want to show it. It's very interesting. It's very interesting.
I care about you so much, I don't know what to do.
Literally. Yeah, okay. Honestly. I think she says that, or he says that in a panel. And he's just like, I think she says, my father cares so deeply. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know.
How do I love you, daughter of mine?
Yeah. Like, he's the type of father that he wants to push her away constantly, but it's for her safety. It's for her safety, you know? And one of the things that he used to say when she was young and when she was on the military bases with him is that women don't belong on the military base, which is like very interesting. And so, but his excuse was he didn't want her to get hurt and he mm-hmm. wanted her to be safe, et cetera, et cetera. But again, he was so emotionally distant and so detached that he was more focused on the work that he was doing rather mm-hmm. than his own family. Obvious. It's very obvious. The more you go about, you're like, oh, he's not even, it's not even that he doesn't care about them necessarily. Kind of true. But he's so focused on being the military man that he's like, whatever. But it's even noted in canon that Ross was more excited to go back into battle than he was when Betty was born, which is nuts.
Whoa.
He very openly, at least obviously, not spoken perhaps, but he was very obviously hoping for a boy.
Yeah. So
that he could carry on the military tradition.
Of course.
Which says a lot about the times too, because obviously. Yeah. Females can still be in the military, but according to Ross, however, yeah. So they were like, you know, the wife would approach and she's like, oh, it's a girl. And he's like,
damn,
that's okay. I guess it's breathing. Like, he didn't care. Jesus. It's so,
my God,
it's so,
man.
Yeah. like from the get-go, man. And so, yeah, he hoped for a son to carry on the tradition. And so, but yet when he got a letter like, oh, general, you're going to war, he's like, yes, can't wait. He's so excited.
God.
So messed up.
I love war.
I know, exactly. Conflict. Killing people. So Incredible Hulk 291, it really serves a great primer as a great primer for Ross's history. Like, you know, I showed you a couple of screenshots. That alone, I was like, geez, it literally goes through his entire like history in one fell swoop. And it even taps into, of course, Ross and Betty and Bruce. And yeah, and addresses the whole thing. And the craziest thing, I think it's the end of the issue. There are two panels in particular.
Uh-huh.
Completely address Betty's relationship with her father, and I put the quote on the side. And so this is from the book, and it basically encompasses the entire vibe that is Ross. And it says, in his long and illustrious career, Ross had known defeat. He had lost skirmishes, even battles, but it wasn't until he heard the word traitor fall from his daughter's lips that he realized he had lost his own personal war. Yeah, it's so like, oh, and he doesn't realize that until it's too late, of course. So lessons learned. And so as for live action and the MCU, Dr. Elizabeth Betty Ross, portrayed first by Jennifer Connelly.
Crazy.
My favorite actress right there.
Crazy.
In The Hulk by Yang Li, and then subsequently Liv Tyler. In The Incredible Hulk and Captain America, Brave New World, if you didn't know.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. And so easily said, very daddy-daughter until Bruce Banner comes along for the ride, which is a very clear through line when it comes to this particular suite of characters.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the two find their differences when it comes to ethics and morals. Thunderbolt is a far less forgiving and far less open-minded man compared to his daughter. You can tell when Bruce and everything he does, I was like, wow, he's really not caring if his daughter's in the field. And he's like, fire the missiles. And then he sees her and he's like,
wait.
He let them do it. And then was like, oh, wait, my daughter's there. I should probably stop. Like, you jerk. And then, God, he's so bad, but he's so good at being
bad. What a guy, man. What a guy.
Yeah, and the common denominator throughout his tenure in live action is that he just wants to do right by his daughter. And it's like I said at the top, he keeps using her as the excuse. It's oftentimes true. And then there are times where he's clearly not even, he's lying. He's 100% lying.
Of course.
Yeah. And so there are great casualties and collateral damage because he's like protecting his daughter. And it's like, yeah, bro, you weren't really doing it for her. And then at the end, as we saw, spoiler alert, in Captain America Brave New World, Betty and Thunderbolt eventually rekindled the relationship as Betty visited her father as he was in custody aboard the raft.
Yeah, I wonder what happens there.
I know. It's going to be very interesting. And we'll chat about it at the end, but I don't know. Curious, but I'm glad they got Liv Tyler back for Canada.
I know.
Tremendous, tremendous.
That is a
huge,
great pull.
Yeah, sure. So for love interest, a short, sweet little list. It is one person, and that is Karen Lee Ross. Not much to know about her, actually, and it's the same over in live action, but again, after Ross graduated from the U.S. Military Academy, he was stationed stateside under the command of a captain named Lee, who was an officer of the Army Air Corps. And so Ross deeply, deeply and greatly respected Lee in the profession. He wanted to be, it was like his new father figure of sorts. And so Ross wanted to be looked at in the same light. And naturally, like I mentioned, of course, he fell in love with his daughter, and that only magnified the respect that he had for Lee. And so he married Karen, and they became the military couple. And so despite Ross's changing stations, Karen followed in support, you know, moving from place to place well through the birth of their daughter, to which we know was not received as well as it could have been if it was a boy. Like, damn, dude. And so, yeah, although much isn't known about Karen beyond Ross's dedication to and love of her, she succumbed to cancer when Betty was about 12 years old and Ross never remarried. So definitely in love with that woman, all things aside. And so Karen Lee Ross, I was about to write like, oh, no MCU counterpart because we definitely never saw her. But she is uncredited and seen in a photo in Captain America Brave New World. That's right.
I think so. Yeah, I think I remember seeing that too, but yeah, with her, subtle.
Young Betty. Yeah, super subtle. It's a photo on Ross's desk in the presidential chamber. Mm-hmm. And so she was also mentioned in the Incredible Hulk film, and she gave Betty this necklace that was like a heart, little heart pendant with diamonds all over it. And it was a minor plot point in the film. Yeah. She didn't want to get rid of it. She hawked it for money so they could be on the run. And then at the end of the movie, Bruce gets it back for her and sends it in the mail. Otherwise, no huge notable presence in the films. So once again, you know, she's kind of fridge bridged. She's not really anything else. But yeah, that's Karen. So for notable adversaries, I could have gone nuts. I could have gone crazy.
A bad person usually has a lot of adversaries.
Yeah, exactly. But with Bruce in particular, I was like, pages upon pages. It could have been a JJ and a Spider-Man situation, but I decided to forego that. And I quite literally just put, what could possibly be said that wasn't already covered above?
Yeah.
In episode 32, these two have been in the thick of it since day one for a number of reasons, and many of which we have barely scratched the surface here. So
I'm sure
this is like there. It's impossible. Yeah, there's no way.
I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen more interaction of them in the, on the MCU space.
Right. Which is, if you think about it, you're like, oh yeah, he's actually, no, it never happens.
Not even in, I don't even think.
Black Widow, Civil War is the only part that we would even.
What about was it Infinity War or Endgame where they can't? No. Yeah, he was. Oh, well, it was Bruce was in the Avengers compound, but then I think Thunderbolt Ross was like the hologram, like making a call. He didn't interact with Bruce.
He didn't interact.
He was interacting with like mostly like Nat and Steve.
Right.
Steve.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Wild if you think about it. Yeah, they definitely don't. And then again, Mark Ruffalo's Bruce Banner has probably acknowledged Betty once, and that's it. If even that, and that was probably in Avengers. So 13 years ago. Like, holy crap. But speaking of Bruce in the MCU, portrayed first by Eric Bana in 2003, then Edward Norton in 2008. Before the beginning of Mark Ruffalo's tenure in 2012 with the Avengers. So again, kind of the same thing. Yeah, from the very beginning, it's always been something, at least when it came to the Universal's films.
Yeah.
And then since Ross hit the MCU, it's just been kind of been everybody. That's Ross against the world at this point. Very interesting. And they definitely use him as like a government head. So he is their tie to the government and government workings. And it makes sense. I mean, if you're going to have all these characters like Captain America and Hawkeye and Black Widow and Iron Man, for that matter, it makes sense to tie Ross to all of them and not just Hulk, which is interesting because, people refer to Captain America Brave New World as a Hulk movie, which kind of is.
Yeah.
If you think about it. But it's like, just make a Hulk movie. Just make it.
I know. Stop being weirdos, man.
Yeah, it's so strange. I get it. But I'm just like, come on, play nice. And that brings us to Emil Blonsky, the Abomination. So again, another one that I was going to go ham on. And I was like, you know what? Actually, no, because we could do another character study on Emil. Yeah. He's actually been in the MCU and in the films quite a bit at this point.
Yeah.
Because he was in She-Hulk as well. So just going to stick pretty surface level as far as these two are concerned. And it seems that in the comics, at least, the common thread between these two is that Ross would often barter with Abomination, offering a cure for his condition, quote unquote, if he would battle Hulk for Ross.
Jeez.
Even after the Abomination was the cause of Betty's death. So she died because of him, but Ross was still willing to play ball with him to get back at Bruce. So crazy. Again, it says a lot about the man.
Yeah.
And then in the comics, once again, Ross himself eventually kills Abomination as the Red Hulk.
My God.
Again, getting revenge for Betty, naturally.
Sure.
So, yeah, these two, like, yeah, that they're, it, he, again, no friends.
No friends. Hulk, no friends.
He doesn't have friends.
Hulk, he just no has, friends.
He just has adversaries that he takes
advantage
of, and he's an opportunist in the most simple kind, in the most simple way, which makes him a bad guy by proxy, if you ask me, but he's kind of an anti-hero, right?
Mm.
And so that leads us to Emil Blonsky, Abomination in the MCU, portrayed throughout his entire MCU tenure, live action tenure, by Tim Roth.
Crazy.
Yeah, so wild if you think about it. It's, again, he's been in it for a long haul.
A long time.
Yeah, first seen in The Hulk. Last scene in 2022, She-Hulk, Attorney at Law, which is funny because I did not expect him to be such a key player in that show. But yeah, hoy vey. And so not necessarily an adversary for Ross in live action as much as he was a wild card ally, at least until the last bit of the Incredible Hulk film.
Uh-huh.
But holy moly, the fact that we hadn't seen Emil for a long time. Until
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that they were able to get Tim Roth back and he was like, yeah, I'll do it.
Sure.
Yeah, because if you look at his MCU timeline, it technically rounds out that he has been in it almost
the longest.
As long as RDJ and such. Because, yeah, 2008. Oh, I said the Hulk earlier. I meant the Incredible Hulk. So 2008, 2011, we saw him again, 2021, 2022. And so 2011... That was the short in between the release of Incredible Hulk and the official start of the MCU was Phil Coulson and the guy, the Hydra guy that was undercover. I forgot his name from Winter Soldier. The mm-hmm. guy with the glasses. There was a short film called called The Consultant. And it was just basically them and how they were going to send Tony Stark to go talk to General Ross, mm-hmm. which does occur at the end of Incredible Hulk. But yeah, so before She-Hulk, we hadn't seen Blonsky
in a while,
consultant, and then Shang-Chi, which wasn't even necessarily, it was Abomination. So
yeah,
it's so crazy. The character's been in this much stuff. And Blonsky was otherwise an officer in the UK Commando Force who was injected with various serums and mutated into a force as powerful as the Hulk, something he more or less obsessed over. So over the course of the Incredible Hulk, he's just power hungry. He wants to be this amazing agent soldier, and he becomes it with that serum. And then this sets course for the Harlem incident mentioned in Captain America Brave New World when Abomination and Hulk fought. And they ravaged the city. And so it was one of those other things that led to the Accords and, mm-hmm. and all the events that happened thereafter. Yeah. And then Blonsky was otherwise imprisoned for his crimes until the Shang-Chi thing. But even then, he was still imprisoned, but he was being teleported
out.
He was just
getting teleported out in and out Wong. With Wong.
Yeah. It's so funny. And then so we haven't really seen him since She-Hulk, and where would we leave him in She-Hulk? Was he still at the retreat?
I think so.
In a peaceful
group. Yeah, because it was like groupies. Rehab almost, yeah, right? Rehab. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. So they haven't had any sort of crossover. Yeah,
crazy.
Since the old days, yeah. But fun fact, Ray Stevenson was apparently up for the part, but ultimately passed. And he then took up the short-lived and often forgotten role of Frank Castle in 2008's Punisher War Zone.
Wow.
That's a good movie.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Good movie, but people don't remember that one ever. So aside Blonsky, there is, of course, the one and most modern-day figure, Samuel Stearns, the leader, as far as his adversaries go. So... like many heroes and their adversaries, speaking of, leader is a pest that comes with the Hulk's baggage. So he comes in and out of storylines. He's just in the mix somehow. It's kind of like I was thinking about this the other day. I was like, who would I compare him to in Spider-Man terms? Who would he be, right?
Yeah.
I would say he's like the Doc Ock.
Mm, he's not, okay.
He's not, not quite the Green Goblin, but he's the Doc Ock of the Hulk realm. And so beyond resurrecting Ross, it's a pretty long story. I didn't want to get into it because, again, this is another character we could talk about, probably won't, but
yeah,
long-winded storyline. But it involves a character named Zizax.
Zax.
Okay. Zax.
And he possesses electrical powers. It involves him and an overpowered mutant that Ross sacrificed himself to kill in order to save, you guessed it, Betty.
Jesus, dude. So,
yeah, it's so crazy. Everything relates to Betty.
If horrible father, man.
Yeah, he's a terrible father. And so Leader is most notably linked to Ross for turning him into Red Hulk after all these events happen with MODOK. So again, they're playing with science, trying to bring the man back, trying to prey on his thirst for revenge and power and control, and it worked. And so there are clearly tons of micro stories in between, but again, he's still one of the most notable as far as Ross goes. Which of course brings us to the live action, where he's portrayed by Tim Blake Nelson. I remember when we first watched it, Captain America Brave New World, a guy behind me or behind us, like when he popped up on the screen, they're like, oh, it's the dude from the Incredible Hulk. I was like, wow, these people. It's like fan event for sure, because it took me a minute to remember this is the same exact guy who appeared in 2008's The Incredible Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
Came back for 17 years later, for the record. 17 years.
That's crazy. That's a long time.
Think about it that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
To come back for Brave New World. And so he was indeed a cellular biologist who claimed to have created an antidote for Bruce Banner's gamma radiation mutation. And so he used the alias Mr. Blue before uncovering his true identity. And that all happened in The Incredible Hulk. And so in his true mad scientist fashion, Stern then revealed to be harvesting large quantities of Bruce's irradiated blood. And he was replicating it and creating it to test trial the antidote. and he was trying to create the quote unquote next stage of human evolution. And then, of course, Emil Blonsky obtains the sample of Bruce's blood and the effects of the super soldier and radiation, mm-hmm. create what Stearns himself described as an abomination. And then that led to the climax of that Hulk film. But later in continuity, we obviously learned that despite the events of The Incredible Hulk, Stearns was still alive. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it was interesting rewatching it because I was like, I know he got in the mix of the battle when Blonsky first became Abomination. And so, yeah, Stearns was then like, he was just like squat, like a little fly, and he hit his machines. And it's so funny because he's perfectly under the machine containing the radiated blood.
Yeah.
And it just perfectly like dropped onto his little forehead, which is why that left side of his head is
enlarged, so
enlarged in Captain America.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he suffered head injuries and then he got contaminated, which mutated him. And so, yeah, from that point on, you have to think, so for 17 years, quote unquote, let's say 19 years, because MCU is 2027 at this point, Ross held Stearns at the Camp Echo 1 base where he was further exposed to radiation treatments. And so all these treatments seem to enhance his intelligence. And then we got this big-brained green guy after all of it. And it all backfired on Ross, of course, because Stearns was tasked to finding a cure to that heart condition that Thunderbolt had. And, you know, in the true Thunderbolt fashion, he kept making those empty promises of, oh, yeah, when I'm president, I'm going to let you out of this place. We're going to find you a cure.
Of course.
And of course, didn't do it.
No.
Did not do it. He only made everything worse and, you know, all for the pills. And yeah, so that was hardly the end of it. Stearns reemerged throughout the entire film and ended up being kind of the big baddie of the film beyond Red Hulk. And he created those mind control devices that would unravel everybody, including Isaiah Bradley. So it's so nuts. It's kind of like, wow, mastermind behind the camera.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, lest we forget, he was responsible for the emergence of this little guy named the Red Hulk.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing.
He knew what he was doing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Start to finish. And he provided that foreboding end credit scene of you know, interesting. Yeah. The quote about probabilities in the heroes world. Yeah. And so multiverse, it just rang like multiverse. He's talking about the multiverse. And so similarly, I wonder if it's any at all related to like what Strange said, right? Like in Endgame, the probabilities, seeing all the outcomes.
Yeah.
So has Stern become so intelligent he knows everything?
Right. So, like, what does he know?
Right. Well, he's probably in his way, he has conducted every experiment possible.
Yeah.
And thought about every outcome possible. And so he's setting course for whatever's next.
Yeah.
He gonna be scary. I think we might actually see him again, but
yeah, I believe it. I mean, yeah, he's in jail or he's probably on the raft.
Gotta be on the raft.
You just never know.
Yeah, yeah. We're definitely gonna feel the effects of his words, though. I think for sure. So that leaves us to other versions and in other media. And so, funny enough, Red Hulk and or Thunderbolt Ross are in a lot of things. Like, you may not think so, but they are. But I kept it to just animation because Ross has appeared quite a bit in.
He
officially appeared very recently in the Marvel animated universe with Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, where he's voiced by Travis Willingham. And he appeared in season 1, episode 6, titled Duel with the Devil.
Nice.
Some episode with Daredevil, dude.
Of course.
And then similar to his MCU counterpart's entry, Ross served as the Secretary of State who ordered the Avengers to sign Sokovia Accords, etc., etc. But due to the events of episode 1. So it's not necessarily because of the other stuff, but, you know, because it's proper. It's not MCU proper.
Type. Yeah.
And so as far as what's known, the Avengers took a similar route to the events of Civil War, and they split into those who believed in signing the accords and not. And so it's still Cap versus Iron Man, which is funny. So even in animated universe, they're like, nah, we don't agree. And so in Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man specifically, Ross is contacted by Norman Osborn to help down Doc Ock. After Spidey gets his ass handed to him. Yeah, it's interesting how they're integrating. Again, it's like all these supernatural characters, all these characters that sort of align with the government, they're kind of using them in the same way. To connect them with Ross makes sense, funny enough. Mm-hmm. And so he has not appeared since that one episode, but it's presumed, you know, he'll continue following a similar route to the MCU version. So if he comes back into animation, he's probably going to do the same stuff. Because I think he did in What If too, right? Like
he did.
Yeah, because he wasn't Red Hulk yet.
It was just Ross. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's obviously all these versions are based off of William Hurt. So I'm curious if they'll change it at all. but yeah, he's everywhere. He's in a couple of games too. Mm-hmm. I was pretty set on seeing a Red Hulk skin for Marvel Rivals, but they didn't do it. They just did like an avatar or something.
I wonder if they will. That'd be a crazy team up.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't doubt it. Once they get more into it, I think it's definitely a possibility. So for Almost Was, it was absolutely difficult to find anything regarding the actual audition process for Ross, especially considering his cinematic origins. And beyond William Hurt, but yeah, could not find a dang thing.
I believe that just because
you
find William Hurt, you're like, oh yeah, he's it. And then William Hurt. And you're like, man, unfortunately he passed, but we have to continue you know, this legacy. And then it's like, oh shit, Harrison Ford is down.
Yeah, I know, right?
Sure.
The funny thing being that it was like, why did Harrison take the role? And he was like, oh, I liked what they were doing. Like that was it. He was like, I like what Marvel Studios is doing. They're doing
and like getting paid a lot of money. I mean, let's just be honest. Like
he got a cool 15 mil, 20 mil, maybe.
Yeah. You sign like a 2-movie contract, maybe. Yeah, good.
All right.
You're good.
And they were just like, just do this one role and you'll just get cameos and we'll still, you know, money.
Money, 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 money.
Yeah, that what is that? That sweet, sweet Marvel cash.
Exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, so what do you think? What do you think about the future of Ross?
I think we see him again for sure. In what capacity? I don't know. Like,
is he getting out of the raft?
Yeah, like is it a breakout of the raft? Like like in Civil War or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, he's obviously very important, but obviously the connection there is with Cap.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know. We're definitely seeing him again.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know into what context and at what capacity. So
yeah, I agree.
He's coming back. Agree. He's coming back. One of the few times where we're finally like, no, they'll be back.
It's that end screen of like Thunderbolt Ross will return.
No, he'll be back.
In one way or another, he's coming back. So for suggested reading, again, like Hulk is not my super duper number one knowledge base, but I was able to pull four obvious ones together. Again, Incredible Hulk number 291, published 1984. Ross's origin story, as well as an incredible download of his major history from the team Bill Bent. I put Bantlow in my notes. Nice. Bill Mantlow, Sal Buscema, Jerry Tulloch, and Bob Sharon. Fantastic issue. Very, very interesting stuff. 2008's Hulk Volume 2, issues 1 through 25. So this is where we first are introduced to Red Hulk. Mm-hmm. And it came, it's very interesting because you don't find out who he is until, I believe, issue 24 or 23.
Mm-hmm.
So you go almost what was probably a year or two of just like, who is the Red Hulk? It's very interesting. It's definitely a guessing game until that 23rd issue, and then you realize it is Ross indeed. That comes from Team Jeff Loeb. The big guy. Ed McGuinness, who is another big guy. Dexter Vines and Jason Keith. And then there is this incredible and dense storyline called the World War Hulks story arc by Jeff Loeb, Greg Pak, and others, which spans about six titles and 13 issues total. So there's a lot of title jumping, but it's a fantastic storyline. It involves everybody under the sun that you can imagine. And obviously the original run of Incredible Hulk, which kicked off in 1962, courtesy of Stan the Man Lee and Jack King Kirby, along with Stan Goldberg. So all that said, that's the end of the show.
Wow. I mean, for a man that, if you take off the Red Hulk, and it's just Thunderbolt Ross, still pretty dense of a character.
Still pretty dense. Yeah, I agree. And again, like to your point, I didn't even go into like major Red Hulk events. This was really about Thunderbolt Ross because that's the character at his core, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, he's an interesting, fascinating little character we have here.
Yeah.
But for the next episode. So we've got a little room. Jeff's making karate chops.
I don't have the things.
The size.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've got a little room to play around the Marvel sandbox right about now as we wait to watch the rest of Daredevil Born Again. But because
Born Again,
that reel did so well. It's like, it's because of Jeff. It's all because of Jeff, the Born Again. I hope everybody hears that now. They hear the Born Again when they even think about Daredevil. You know what I mean?
It's ridiculous.
Iconic. But yes, because of Daredevil, we're in the spirit of Daredevil season. So we're going to finally tackle the entity that is Elektra. Elektra! Oh, yeah, there he goes. He's doing it again. I don't know what he's doing. You bring me to life. Anyway. And finally, a thank you to all of our Patreon supporters and a special We Are Groot salute to Edgar, Ariel, Melanie, Ed, Tyler, Jenny, Joliz, Laura, Andrea, Sherry, Ashley, Nats, Chris, Andrew, Katie, and Robin.
Woo!
Follow us on social, STRKCNTRST. And if you like what you hear, please review, rate, and subscribe.
Once again, thanks for listening and possibly watching.
Possibly.
We will catch y'all in the next one.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
You and I haven't always agreed on how much latitude enhanced individuals deserve. But what you've accomplished has given me reason to reconsider. Which is why I want you, Captain America, to help me rebuild the Avengers.